Welcome to Improv 409, the podcast that shines a spotlight on the improv community right here in Toledo, Ohio. Each episode, I'll sit down with local performers to talk about what makes improv exciting, terrifying, hilarious, and life-changing. You'll get behind-the-scenes stories, personal journeys, and maybe a few scenes and laughs along the way. If you've ever wondered what really happens on and off the stage, or if you've thought, improv sounds fun, but I could never, then you're in the right place. You'll get the Improv 411 here on Improv 419. I'm your host, Lindsay, and welcome. This episode, our level one teacher steps out of the classroom and sits down with me to talk improv evolution, how he's grown, and to share his love of the game. Welcome back for part two with my favorite Muppet, Jeremy Natter.
Hi, I'm very excited to be here.
Very happy to have you.
Very happy to be back, I guess. Thanks for thinking of me again.
Part one went great. People need to go back and listen to it. So now I want to talk to you about the in-person Jeremy Natter, teacher and improviser. And we heard a little bit about your start. And I think I'm curious about your feelings with improv that first day of class. Can you describe that?
Yeah, my first day of class, from the previous episode, as you may recall, I got, you know, the bug from college. So I'm pretty fresh out of college back in 2014. I graduated in 2012, started improv in 2014 in Toledo, and really no experience other than just watching like some Whose Line Is It online. And so I'm very fresh out of college energy, and in my class is, as mentioned, the most very diverse. So I wasn't the youngest, but I was one of the youngest. And then I had people that, you know, each decade above me kind of throughout, all the way even into their 60s, I believe. And I remember looking around the room, and it was mostly a female class, and thinking like, okay, these are kind of like moms, my mom age, young moms. I'm like, I need to not be college Jeremy and have those kinds of conversations and initiate those kinds of scenes or utilize that vocabulary. And so I was like, I need to be real PC. And then the following 2 hours was some of the most filthy, vile things I had ever heard. And they did not come from me. So I was like, oh, this will be all right. And I was like, okay, everything seems like it's fair game and everyone seems ready and gearing up to go for it.
So did you feel like just a natural performer early on in your life then?
I mean, I would, like we, you know, I had 3 older sisters, so like playing house, playing Barbies, playing dolls. I mean, that was all stuff I grew up with. So imagining environments and scenarios, acting, playing out things that weren't actually happening, but just, you know, playing pretend was a big part of my childhood. And then, yeah, growing up or going through college, rather, having my roommate being video film production and just getting to take like what is in my mind for the concept of this video and being able to see that on a screen, I was like, wow, I want to do that. I want to do more of that. And then improv was just very naturally like, oh, I need to try to get other, I don't have, it's not a camera. So I need people to picture and see what I'm seeing. And then in a, you know, an actory sense being like, I want them to feel how I'm feeling in that moment. So the search for presence, which is what we all, like almost every improviser is, that's what they're searching for and that's what they long for. And that's the goal of a scene is if you're feeling present, you're not really thinking about things. You're almost operating outside of your mind and body at times. And you're just like, I will let the scene take me where it needs to go, and you serve the scene that way. That all actually did feel pretty natural, even though the starter steps to get there, like the individual exercises and like the in practice that Nick was having us do, was like, it felt very abnormal. Mm-hmm. It felt familiar, but super abnormal. And so you're having to like think your way through it until you're not anymore.
Did you struggle at all with that transition between doing kind of screen work? Was that scripted? Screen work?
Thankfully, so yes, it would be scripted, but thankfully our experience with it was a very like film as you go, develop as you go, and like we'd have a general concept, but as far as the individual shots, it's like, all right, we have this idea in our head, how can we film that? And you're like, oh, that gives me this idea, then that leads into the next idea, and then that leads into the next idea, which was very improvised.
Yeah, I mean, that's the foundation of like a yes and, kind of building upon each other. That's really cool.
Exactly.
Do you remember your first like stage performance and what that was like?
Oh my gosh, I do. It was at The Rep, which if you're unfamiliar with, you hang out downstairs in like a basement, and then while you're getting ready to go, you're on this narrow staircase that is super steep, and it's almost a surreal experience because all the performers before from plays that have gone on there, there's like all these Sharpie notes written on the wall, so it just feels like it just is a very special moment. But that stage is like 5 feet high, and you're worried you're gonna fall off it, and the lights hit you, there's like a waterfall of lights, and they're just blinding you, so it's very overwhelming. It's the most nervous like I've been. I've played a ton of sports and throughout high school and college, and that was more nervous than making like the game winning play.
Yeah, that seems like it would make it feel so just real, like you are performing for people.
Well, yeah, so it feels extra scary when you think you're performing for the audience. And ultimately, yes, you are performing for an audience. We want them to have, we're entertainers at the end of the day, and we want them to have a great time. But the reassurance came from, it's like, well, you're performing for your classmates.
Right.
We're going to do what we do, what we've taught, and the audience will get to witness and enjoy that. But that is also why it's so nervous and nerve-wracking, because you're like, I don't want to let my teammates down in the moment on the day. And so you're like, I got to support them as much as I can and be a good team player.
Yeah. I think that's one of my favorite things about improv is just the collaboration. And like when you're looking across at your scene partner or teammate and
you're both scared.
Yeah. You're both scared, but also in it too. Yeah. Like, especially when you find whatever the scene is or the character is, like you can really live in both of those spaces.
Yeah.
Is there a part of improv that you feel you like carry outside of the stage, like in your life? Is that something that you feel you've grown through?
Being not necessarily, I mean, yeah, it could be Johnny on the spot, or just being like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I see that there's a need for something, so I'm going to step into it and figure it out. And oftentimes I've been like, okay, these two people are having a hard time communicating, and it's, well, neither of them is really listening and neither of them feels heard at the same time. So it's like, okay, well, you're saying this, you're both missing this middle ground. And then they're like, oh, well, yeah, I had that done 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I had it done 2 weeks ago. And you're like, oh, great. Oh, there you go.
That's really interesting. 'Cause I think I can recognize that in your performances too. Like if a scene is missing a piece, that you are willing to step out and be whatever's needed for
those connector.
People.
Yeah. Yeah, the conduit to the scene that connects those two things. The other thing that as I've done it for a while now, I'm not making a conscious effort to do it, but improv teaches you to, if we watch like the last episode, we talked briefly about like little details that were in like a speech pattern or like the emotion or like what you were doing with your hands. So that was giving like context. And I feel like I'm good at noticing those things. But in my everyday life, I've been told how like I will latch on to the most minuscule thing that wasn't even said. And it'd be like, you know, we could be talking about produce, and then I'd be like, well, tell me about your grandpa. And I'd be like, my grandpa and I used to pick apples all the time. Oh. I was like, I didn't know that detail, but somehow there was something about what you were saying that was like, I don't know, I just got this vibe, and the context kind of helped me fill it in. And they're like, wow. And so somehow latching onto those details has become a little bit of a superpower.
Yeah, it sounds like pattern recognition, maybe, like you've experienced that sort of connection before?
I would say well, definitely pattern recognition with people will be like, I know how this person typically behaves, and sometimes to a detriment where, you know, your own insecurities or self-consciousness or anxiety is like, oh, they're going to always do that if it's a negative thing. But then also times when you're like on the positive side of things, you're like, oh, great, I get to see this person who always makes me happy, who always, you know, tells me how their day is going. They always improve my day. So,
yeah, I'm curious too then. As a teacher for improv, when new students come in, is that, I would assume that that's a tool that you use to be like, oh, I recognize this sort of personality type or this nervousness that they're feeling.
So pretty quickly, I can see, particularly in level one, a student's pitfalls or like potential pitfalls or like a bad habit that they might be forming and try to not necessarily go for like a correction of it, but trying to be like, that's the right instinct, but let's kind of steer it a little bit different direction. And then one of the things I love about it is when they take that advice and then it clicks for them and they have that beautiful discovery moment and they're like, wow, that worked. And I'm like, how does play feel?
Oh.
Do you remember what that was like?
Yeah. It feels like it'd be very special to be a part of that moment.
It's the best thing to teach. Even like starting out I'd get asked a question and I'm like, I don't know, but I got to make up an answer on the spot and deliver that and hope that it's right.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned way more about how to improvise from teaching than I did in classes, at least for like a moment anyway. And it was like, wow, this is a whole new level or perspective on improv that I would have never gained without getting to teach.
Yeah, it seems like an inspiring motivation too, I would think, because learning for yourself is one thing, but then wanting to support and encourage these, you know, baby improv minds in that class, like, it's nerve-wracking to walk in.
Absolutely. And they're all walking in week one individuals. Sure, there could be overlap, like you, as a coworker, or we've had couples do it. Like, it's like I said, level one is just one of the most eclectic groups of people that are all just willing to give something a try, and you have to lean and rely on one another in order for it to go well. And so the moments where they're okay, they come in as individuals, but by the end of it, ultimately becoming an ensemble and a troupe or a team that is just super collaborative. They have each other's backs. That's one of the happiest feelings I get in any context. And it's weird, like it's the coach in me that gets that joy. But back to like the noticing the little details aspect of it, it's like, what is this group doing? What do they commonly find themselves doing and what works well? And from that, something that's super fun for me to do is create a game or like a structure for them to follow that heightens that. And a lot of times it's reskinning like a game that already exists, just kind of repackage it, rephrase the verbiage of the rules of it, so to speak. And then being like, you guys are most yourselves and at your best when you kind of follow this guideline. If everyone's kind of playing by those rules, there's nothing like it. No other troupe does it, and no troupe can do it as well as you, regardless of experience level.
Can you give an example of that? So like what specific type of people or emotions that like they might be feeling where you'd be like, oh, this, I think this game will help them develop this certain type of tool.
Okay, so there was a class I taught that they were, there's a game called I Am a Tree. And you come out, the first round of it is I'm a tree, and they assume the position of a tree, however that looks to them. And then another person will come out and make a physical choice, a stagnant physical choice, and say, I'm the apple. And then another person builds on that and says, I'm the worm within the apple. Okay, and then the next time, like you keep one of those, like I'm an apple, and be like, oh, I'm the, and then you wipe away the other two people, and then two new people will come in one at a time. And it's supposed to be like that, only three people at a time. But one particular class was, they just naturally, everyone got out there and built off of this tree or whatever it evolved into. And that was the thing, it kept evolving and they kept building and they kept naturally recycling. And I'm like, there's people with tons of experience that I've taken classes with or been in workshops that are being told to do what they're doing and can't or won't, or it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And they were just naturally doing that. And I'm like, well, that is a format that, or kind of like an opening structure that already exists. So I was like, well, let's just name it and then tell them to specifically do that. And the, every time they did it, I was just like blown away. It was so much fun. When we play a game called Yes, Let's, it's like, hey, everybody, let's wash a car. And instead of having 12 people washing their individual car, it's amazing to see everyone pretending like they're a car wash and a couple people are the That's car cool. and people in the car. And it's like, it's so fun. So they were just naturally playing that game super well. And that's like a complicated opening to a long form structure. And it's like, you guys are, this is like your third week of class. Yeah. And we did that. That's amazing.
That's really cool. And I think it's such, it speaks to you as a teacher too, to recognize and I think create a safe space for them to be that creative. Because I've also been in workshops where becoming an object is never like at the forefront of players' minds. So it's cool to have like such a creative space created for level one people.
Yeah. And that's, you're going to be most yourself when you're like, there are no rules, so to speak, right? Like anything can go within, you know, a social construct and, you know, everything's like fair play and all that. Mm-hmm. But when they're just themselves, it's like, you just get to see them, like I mentioned earlier, they're their inner kid. They're their kid all over again. And it was like, this is what play was. Like, we had no judgment. There was no context for why we should or shouldn't like someone. It was just based off of feeling, and we would just ride it. And it was like, you know what? There's no right or wrong. We're just going to do the thing because that's what seems like should come next.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah. Do you have any advice for people that might be nervous stepping into improv?
First thing is you have to do it. You have to show up. If you're thinking about doing it, you have to show up and then you have to come back. And mm-hmm. so there's going to be times where like this feels icky, that particular exercise, like there's certain exercises I do and I'm like, that felt a little icky, a little sticky or like rough or I don't know. It wasn't as smooth as some other things.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, uncomfortable. And then you do it more and you're like, oh, I get how to flourish in this. Mm-hmm. And they're like, wow, this thing that was uncomfortable, I'm good at? And you're like, yeah, yeah, absolutely. So you have to do it. The other thing is, I would say, just as like a general thing I've heard, not even improv related, you have two eyes, two ears, but only one mouth. And so I talk about how you can listen with your eyes as well. So you're listening four times harder than you're speaking. Mm. So don't think about what you have to say. One of the biggest hiccups or barriers that people will not want to take an improv class for, be like, they're so quick. They think of things so fast. I don't know what I would say. And it's not about what you say. It's about what you hear. And then just react to it.
I love that. Are you ready to do some improv?
Yeah, I hyped myself up enough. let's try to do something.
Yeah, let's go. So our suggestion was spring.
The springs have sprung. They're everywhere.
I don't know what we're going to do. They're just springing.
I am not even worried about it.
You're taking this so easily.
Yeah, I mean, when you release a jack-in-the-box, are you ever disappointed?
I mean, I guess it does follow through every time. It does exactly what you would expect it to.
I've been falling down a lot lately, and I think this is going to help out. I mean, my bounce right back up.
Wow. I guess I never thought about it that way.
Yeah. You do a lot of thinking in the Spring Factory.
I've been a little, I guess, just too concerned about
that I've been spending all my time here.
Yeah.
I love my work.
Well, and the falling down.
Oh, yeah, that. Well, that's, you know, equilibrium is I got to tell you, it's not my forte.
I mean, that's not why we hired you, but it does seem to be a hazard in this factory.
Well, that's on account of the...
Oh, gosh. Joey, see, please.
Oh, see, that's it worked like a charm. Yeah. It worked like a charm. Yeah, no. That is not as alarming as it used to be.
I'm glad that the Jacks are dependable enough to spring you back up, Joey. I'm just, you know, still concerned with the constant falling and...
Darlene, I told you. We even put extra springs on this at the bottom of the stairs.
That's good for you. Like, we don't want you to get hurt. The rest of us find it a little inconvenient.
I easily skip over the first 12 steps on the way up and the last 12 on the way down.
Easily? Oh, God, Joey, please. I don't know how much more my heart can take.
It's okay. It's okay. It's good.
It's not, though. It's really scary. You're at work.
Yeah. I love it here. It's like the kind of place where no matter how many mistakes you make, you just bounce right back.
Are more mistakes, Joey?
Oh, yeah. The gelatin, that is...
Don't say it.
It's out. It is also sprung.
No. Again?
It's...
Our livelihoods.
Not many people are hip to... Listen, we... I have this jar left. It's unbroken, and if I fall, it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
You're so cavalier about...
Hey, that's the
please.
Thing. When you work in a place so freeing as...
See?
I didn't drop it. I've been known to have butterfingers. Oh, that's another thing I should probably tell you about. But it's okay. We increase the temperature in here. The butter's loose. There's loose butter.
We're changing the entire environment of this factory just to
suit
your safety needs here. Like, it's... OSHA's gonna come straight at us. We're freezing.
Oh, yeah. That is another thing. They called earlier, and I told them there's nothing to see here. So they probably won't even come back.
Nothing to see here? I think they're pounding at the door now. Like, they're...
Yeah, I thought that might have a reverse psychological effect, and it has, especially, like, we're in the business of touring people at the Gelatin Spring Butter Factory.
I think we put on too many hats, Joey. We're wearing too many hats now.
But it's all for the better.
For the butter.
Better butter.
Insane. Well, thank you so much, Jeremy, for joining us on Improv 419. It's been very exciting talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like there's so much more stuff I would love to talk to you about that we just don't have time for.
I know. Next one. We've already have a part one, part two. People will stay tuned for part 3, 4, and 5.
It's the thing with improv. It never ends.
Yes. Thank you to WGTE, Voices Around Us, and our producer, Chris Pfeiffer, for making this podcast possible. And of course, thank you to today's guests for sharing their stories and their love of improv. You can find Improv 419 at wgte.org/improv419 or any podcast streaming platform. And finally, thank you to you, the listeners, for tuning in and supporting. Please check out the other wonderful podcasts, part of the Voices Around Us series, and stay tuned for more Improv 419 episodes.
WGTE. Voices Around Us.